on your mind? That's what's on my mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're just, that's, I am knee deep in everything you just talked about, you know, all the, you know, thinking you got more time and dealing with aging parents. I'm trying to think everything that was going on last or 2 weeks ago.
How is your mom?
Supposed to be doing this. She's, you know, she's, I'll tell you what, in comparison with one of my clients that I just talked to, his wife, the client, but anyway, I got to talk to his wife today. She's the one that broke her hip. She did it virtually the same day. They were maybe off a day or two, but she broke her hip at the same time my mother did. So right around March 31st, she's still in a wheelchair. And I was like, God, you know, I thought you'd be up by now and being a walker at least, but she's having problems. So compared to her, my mother's really doing extremely well.
Oh, good.
She's scooting around in her, you know, her walker. She seems to be taking all the advice, you know, in stride. She's not bucking the, you know, the advice. She's trying to do her exercises. You know, she's going out walking. And then my father had his big surgery, which it's weird. It's, you know, this is the one that is, and it actually went really well, but it was supposed to be just, you know, when they first described it's just going to be an outpatient, get it done pretty quick kind of thing. And then it became well, you're going to be in here for 2 or 3 days, which is what it ended up being, about 2 or 3 days. And it was fine, but he's a terrible patient. And the anesthesia made him even worse, you know, more agitated than he normally is, you know, so he had a rough time in there, but he's out now. So he's at home. But he had that surgery last Tuesday.
What was it for?
So he has the two aneurysms. He has the abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Whoa.
So get this. Say this is your, let's say this is your aorta that runs down the you know, the
center.
Feeds all of your lower body, right? I guess is what it does.
Yeah, that's a killer.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you get that big, if that blows, it'll wipe you out. So they put in a stent in there. Well, somewhere along the line, they discovered there was a branch of this of the aortic, whatever it is, artery that came out, and it feeds certain organs, but then it branches and comes back right back into the aortic artery.
Oh, wow!
So it goes out and comes back, and it's almost like you just bypassed the stent that they put in. So the stent's in the middle of it, and you got the, you know, the artery on the outside of it. So where they did contain it, now pumping blood into it from the outside, making it bigger. They had to go in and clamp that off at the top and clamp it off at the bottom. And then somewhere
you know,
along
the
lines.
The body will do that, by the way. The body will
bypass,
create its
right?
own bypass.
Right, right, right. So that's got to be what happened, however, God knows how many years ago. So they had to go in there and close that thing off, which is what they did. And they did it. They thought he was going to be under for 2 hours. They thought the surgery was going to take about 2 hours. And it only took them 45 minutes with that, I guess it's that Da Vinci, you know, that robotic thing or whatever. It went right in there. Boom, he was out in 45 minutes, and they had it all knocked out. So it was the best case scenario, you know, as far as that goes. So it was really good. But yeah, he has to wear like this girdle kind of thing, a little belt that goes around him, you know, just to keep everything. And so my dad, I got to think of what my days are here. But anyway, maybe it was yesterday or the day before, he told my sister he wasn't going to wear that belt. he said, "Dad, you've got to wear the belt." And he said, "No, I don't." You know, because I have no idea why he was thinking he didn't. So my sister said, "Dad, you had major surgery. You have staples in there that are holding some of this stuff together, you know, the work that they just did." And he said, I don't have any staples in me. And I don't know if she had the paper there or whatever, but she's like, "Dad, you have like 7 staples in you. And, you know, on the inside. And they're, I don't know how they go away, if they just stay there, if they deteriorate or whatever over time, or they go away. I'm not even 100% sure." But anyway, he doesn't remember all that conversation with the doctors. And that's what we're struggling with right now, is that a lot of things he just doesn't remember.
How old is he?
He's 88. He'll be 89 in December. So.
What same thing happened to my dad from anesthesia. At that age, it's really, I mean, my dad wasn't that old, but my dad was a diabetic, and he had, it's a coronary disease, diabetes ends up being. And he was Mr. Loopy. Mm. It took him forever to come out of his anesthesia, just not thinking, not just, you know, almost like he had had a stroke.
Now, how was he as far as his disposition? Was he
angry?
He was angry? But I'm struggling with my dad.
I would say it's frustration, because you want to be you, right? I mean, that's the biggest problem I have with all this crap that I have to put up with. So I just want to go back to being me. I don't want to feel like this anymore. I don't want to take any more pills. I don't want any of this stuff. And it's like, okay, I got to. And so I work my ass off to get back to being me. So I understand I don't have anger. I just have frustration.
Yeah.
Maybe he's feeling,
you're working on it, though. You're working on it. And that's the thing I think we've all been frustrated with him, is he hasn't really done, you know, he made all the physical therapists leave after he had the stroke. The occupational therapist, he just couldn't understand the benefit of doing these little, you know, kind of finger exercises. You take a little ball or whatever, and you just doing this,
yep,
kind of stuff with it or whatever. I can't even do it. Hell, I'm perfectly healthy. But he ran the person off, but now today he can barely write. You know, I told him, I was giving him a phone number to call for the to get into the whatever it was, the rehab facility that my mother was doing. So he'd write it down, and then he couldn't read his handwriting. So then he'd stop me, and he'd say, no, what was that number again? And I would tell him, and I couldn't figure out what he was doing. I'm like, what's going on? So I got up, walked across the little living room there. I looked at what he's writing. And so I would say each number, you know, like, you know, 9, 7, 2. I mean, but that's what it became, because as he was normally trying to write, hey, you can't read it. And he'd look down and like, shit, I don't even know what I just wrote. Well, if you would have done some of the occupational therapy, this is what occupational therapy is about. Anyway, they've now sent him home. They encouraged him to go to, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of rehab, that it would really help him dramatically, you know, learning to walk again properly, to do all these things. And he said he didn't want to do any of that. He just wanted to go home. And so let him go home.
Yep. I just read another article on the brain and how to stimulate the entire brain. And they said one of the very best things is ping pong, table tennis.
Ping pong. Really? What's the rationale on that one?
It affects every part of the brain.
Kidding.
There's a part of the brain up here that where you see the ball, you know, it calculates where the ball is in space and allows you to hit it, right? This part is the judgment of, you know, seeing and hitting, and back here is coordination. So it's just really interesting. They said literally it affects every part of the brain. So if you can get a person to put in a ping pong table, hire a coach, get them to play, it's the best physical therapy they can have. Now, my mom at 91 she had dementia, and she could hardly remember who we were, but she could play ping pong.
Did she really?
She's a very good table tennis player, and she would laugh and run me back and forth across the table as many times as I could get it back.
That's funny.
There and laugh until she almost fell over.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
It was so much fun. So I'm convinced that is, well, I mean, you study that, you know, you go to these memory unit places, they have, you know, a person that can't talk sits there in an absolute, just, you know, looks like they're in a coma. You put them over in front of a piano and they play a gorgeous piece because they were a pianist, and it comes back like that. And then you take them away and they don't do anything for the rest of the day. But you put them in front of that piano, they'll just keep playing.
Amazing.
It's just amazing, the human brain. It's just fascinating. So
yeah, the mind is crazy.
We'll get him to try and do anything that he loves to do, whether it be fly fishing or anything that would be physical other than, you know, he doesn't want to go to the therapist.
You know, he used to be a very avid golfer. In fact, I got him to talk the other day, and it was, I actually want to try to do this for him. He was talking about, he played, and I didn't play that much golf. I didn't travel around and play different golf courses or anything like that. So when somebody talks about, I know where some of the bigger golf courses are, but I don't know where all these are. But I know there's this golf course, Firestone.
Yep.
Okay. Well, he got to play at Firestone, I guess.
Right.
And when he was working, we lived up in Ohio, and
right.
He got to go play this as a reward for him, and I think he said two other of his colleagues. They had done some programming or whatever, and when they finished this thing, they got award. I remember this right. I don't want to screw the thing up. I'm already going to mess it up. I'm going to have to check with them, because it may have been because they won in their age groups a tournament at their local country club that they got to go play with the pro. Anyway, it was one of those. I need to check with them. Anyway, long story, I'm going to try to shorten it. But he went and he was at Firestone, and I haven't even looked it up. I haven't fact-checked him. So if you know the real truth, maybe we can find it out now. Said he was playing number 16 at Firestone. It's the longest par five that he's ever played. Are you with Firestone? Are you with Firestone Golf Course? Confirm or deny that?
And
anyway, so he said that his almost one and only double eagles.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Hole of the week, number 16 Firestones, AKA the monster. He just got into this like we were, I mean, like he stumbles through all sorts of crap normally, like you can't even hardly follow him. But it's like he tuned in, you know, like on a AM, FM stereo, and you tune into the station, all of a sudden you get it real clear.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. So I until we've talked, I have not even looked this up, but number 16 at Firestone is called AKA the Monster. And it is, see how far this thing is.
It's probably 580 yards.
Is that what it is, 580?
I would bet.
It's huge. So he said he hit his first shot. Let's see what this is. Right spot, but dubbed the monster. Arnold Palmer hit a triple bogey there. 667 yard par 5.
Okay. That's insane.
It's insane. Okay, this is funny though. I mean, because I'd never even heard the story, but like I said, dialed in. He's telling me about it. And he tends to exaggerate sometimes, so I don't know for sure if he's always telling the truth, you know. And because he had this little plaque in his garage when I was growing up, and it said, you know, if you can't dazzle him with your brilliance, baffle him with your bullshit. You know,
that's
that was
my dad.
Yeah, so that's kind of his motto. Anyway, so he went through and recanted this whole, you know, journey through this hole. That he killed his drive, and it just, you know, way down there's a bend and a low spot. He said it just ran down in this low spot and just kept going. And the way it moved around. And his second shot, he hit I think he said a 3-wood or a 5-wood or something like that out of there. And got up there, had no idea. He felt like it was a pretty good shot, but he couldn't see from where he was. And they got up there, and he was like within so many feet. It wasn't very far from the pin. And the pro that was there, he said, "Well, Ray, all you have to do is put this in, and you got a double eagle." And he's like, "My God," he said, "in my head, I'm going, is this going for real, a double eagle? I could really get a double eagle." And said he was, you know, really nervous, but he holed the putt. And but he said, because we were, you know what, where we were talking about this, we were actually talking about funerals and things. I said one of the things that might be helpful is if you and Mom wrote down some notes, things that you guys remember about each other that I would not necessarily remember or know about you, but they're things that are highlights from your life that need to be mentioned. Because that's really important. If you leave it up to me or the kids, we might not know everything that was really important. And he was like, and he said, "Well, I'd just like to have myself bronzed and, what do you say, bronzed and mounted at number 16 at Firestone." I'm like, what the hell? Anyway, that was it. And then he went on to tell us that story. So it's funny how he just spit that out like that. And here I am looking at it, the monster at Firestone, number 16. That was it. So, that interesting? But that's
crazy. It's a great story.
Yeah. Great story. So I need to try to get his mind focused on things like that, because he...
You're going to need to record him. He's not going to write those things down, you know.
Yeah.
So you need to record him. So take your phone, and you got a record button on there, and just start recording it. And most of those new recording buttons will transcribe them, too.
Oh, yeah.
So you can... So every time you go, you get him to tell another story about something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Like we didn't know my dad played football until somebody showed us a high school graduation picture of him with his, you know, summary below it. He never showed it to us. It was one of those things that you got online, you know. And there he was. He played baseball, basketball, and football. And he would never let us play football.
Isn't that weird? My dad wouldn't let us play football either.
It's kind of like, it's probably the smart, I have still great knees and can still play tennis and golf and everything else. And I wouldn't be playing much football now.
No, so, I don't know if I told you, we also lost my best friend's father, passed away. So we're trying to make arrangements. I'm about to head back out of Texas Thursday. Wow. So we've got just a ridiculous amount of stuff. My best friend, his dad went into the hospital. He had cancer. He's 86 years old. He had a negative reaction to his last round of chemo, and his body just started retaining fluid, I mean, just horribly. And so they took him up to the hospital and admitted him or whatever, but he was up on the cardiac ICU floor. And at one point last week, for two nights in a row, my father and his father were separated by one hospital room. So we'd go down and check on my dad, and my sister and my mother would go down and check on his dad, you know, back and forth. But it was really an amazing story. So I've hopefully told it enough now. I won't get all choked up, but on Wednesday, he was just, you know, he had like had enough. You know, it's like, okay, look, I just want you to pull all this, you know, stuff. I don't want to take any more medicine. I want those machines pulled because they have something called pressors that press whatever. I don't know if it's your lungs or heart or one of the two, but they do a job for you. He said, I just want all this stuff pulled off of me. And but I just want, you know, nature to take its course. Whatever's going to happen, if this is my time, I'm ready, you know. And so Todd, my buddy, he said that when they first he talked to his pastor, and then he made that decision. Then he pulled Todd in. Todd's the oldest in the family. And anyway, shared with him. They pulled all that off of him, and all of his vitals normalized. Everything. Right. Just like, perfect. And the doctors came in the next morning, and they're like, you know, your dad may get to go home. And it's like, this is amazing. You know, like a, what a recovery. And so he had about almost a 48-hour period where he was completely lucid, full of energy, no bodily problems, you know, really whatsoever. Got to see all of his grandchildren, all of his children, you know, talk to him very, you know, lucidly about, you know, everything he was proud of, their accomplishments, and all that. And then the nurse, who was a male nurse in there, who Todd said they got really mad at because he had told them, he said, your dad is dying. I mean, so he had told him a few days before, and they're like, F you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know my dad, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And it was like, they got mad at him. And, but he was trying to tell them what to expect. You know, these are the things you need to pay attention to or whatever. So, they went to move him Friday night to hospice. And then so Todd's birthday was Saturday, and he went in there. He stayed up there until late. He said that they went out to dinner. They were supposed to leave because they were having, you know, people had arrived in town and they were going to go out to dinner. But I was just sick to my stomach. He said, I couldn't, you know, almost couldn't leave. He said, I felt so weird being away from the hospital. And so he went back up there and stayed till like, you know, 1 a.m. And his dad wished him a happy birthday. And he said, well, Dad, listen, I'll see you in the morning. And he says, Dad just looked at him and smiled. That was it. And then 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, how you get kind of that respite, you know, like you get that,
there's a surge.
Yeah, a surge right before. Yeah. So
it's very common.
Yeah, yeah. I had heard that before. I just hadn't, you know.
Yeah, it's very common.
Sorry.
And you wonder if he had never, I mean, yeah, the cancer killed him in this case. But the, you know, the chemo usually gets pneumonia. You know, you get pneumonia from the chemo, you know, you get infected, the chemo wears down your immune system, you get the chemo, get the infection, and then pneumonia kills you.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, once you get to that stage, don't ever bother getting more chemo. You know, you're just going to shorten whatever period you have left.
Right. I guess that's what happened.
Rather than elongating it, you shorten it.
Yeah. And that's, but he was great. You know, and he said, look, that, you know, if you could choose a way to die, you know, his last 2 weeks weren't pleasant, but.
Pretty good for him, huh?
Yeah, it was a pretty good way to
exit. Good for Todd, too.
Yeah. Oh, and he was so thankful, too, because he said, you know, that I don't think I've ever run into anybody my whole life that I can think of. I've been thinking about this, is that has said that they want their parent to live no matter what. I want you to use all available means to keep them, you know, like you're exactly the way that I think and what I've always heard is like, if you can't, don't keep me alive, you know, let me go ahead and pass. I don't want to be, if I can't be kept alive on my own or whatever, if there's no, don't do it. But Todd and his brother, and especially his youngest, you know, his younger brother, they were all in on, you know, dad's going to get better. You need to do whatever you can to keep him alive, kind of thing. And so when his dad did that, he absolved them of all that. Like, this isn't what we're going to do, guys. We're going to do this, and this is what I want to do. So they didn't have to make that decision.
Well, fortunately, he was awake.
Yes.
So many times they are not awake, and then the kids fight over it, and then they keep him on a respirator, and they keep him on a, you know, all these machines, and then they, I mean, it's just torture for everybody, and it's not right.
No, it's not right. We're also talking about all the, because we live so long now, they've got so many ways to keep us alive. It's like what ultimately kills us. It seems like it's 10 times worse than what would have killed us originally.
Right.
You know? Like,
yeah, that bear looks pretty good.
One way
know?
Or the other. God. I don't know.
Well,
it's been a weird month.
Is there anything else on your mind, business-wise?
Really, that's it. I've been really trying to get more organized. Dennis would have joined us today, but he actually had like a big thing taken off of his head this morning.
Oh, God.
Some kind of a, he said it's about the size of a dime that they found was causing him problems. He was finding it under his bike helmet. And so they've now sent it off to a lab to see if it's cancerous or not. So, but anyway, so that's what he's got going on. Much, too much stuff. But no, I've just been trying to, my business has been growing. In fact, I just got this thing they send out, this monthly newsletter about assets brought in over $1 million in new deposits in April. I think we're up, I don't know what it is, $6 or $7 million in new net new assets for this year. Yeah. Crazy. And I've been thinking lately that's in spite of me, you know, in spite of me. Believe me. And we've got another large relationship rolling in here in the next 2 weeks, probably.
Part of it is living, you know. Part of it is being there. And just being the you and being there and doing 12-4-2 and people will just gravitate towards you because they know who you are and that you're a good guy. I mean, I literally don't do anything. Well, I do a few things with Supernova, and I probably have had, I got five people last week calling up to get coaching.
Like, awesome. Now, there was a young man that called me. I talked to him for a little while. Out of like North Carolina, I think.
Yeah, I gave him your name. Thank you.
Yeah, he was a nice guy, and Chandler King.
Yes, Chandler King, right here. New prospect.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. His partner, I think, was having a hard time buying in.
Yeah. He was
for
on the
whatever
team.
reason, but you know, and I just said, listen, if I had somebody who was willing to do Supernova, I'm the producing manager. Like, how do we team up together? You know, I mean, let's do this. Let's put our book together and make it work. And like, we'll move to North Carolina and let's do it. I was like, well, I might move to North Carolina. I don't know. I'm going to think about it. But yeah, he seemed to be a really nice guy, young guy. I'm like, listen to you. Money is absolutely not the thing to worry about. This will pay back quick if that's what you're concerned about.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous, right? He's in Charlotte.
Charlotte, yep. That's what I was just looking at.
Yeah, he's a go-getter. Brought in $40 million last year.
Wow. Yeah, and he's got an opportunity where they're taking over, I think, did he say like two or three books of business?
Yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a good nightmare. They're taking over two businesses plus a third one potentially. And he said, we desperately need coaching. I said, yes, you do, because you got yourself an opportunity, but a handful there.
Yeah, so that's what I felt like. That's the kind of person that you feel like I would love to work with. That kind of person, you know, I'd love to be in that kind of a, you know, from a management perspective, because we've got a lot of people here that are they're just not thinking that direction, you know.
You'd love my clients. I don't get any. I mean, just think about who calls me, right? They're up to here and they're successful and they need help. And they want to grow. So they're just ideal, right? So they're not all of them, but, I just started coaching a team in Nashville. And I thought they were big, and I'm, you know, I used to coach the guy 15 years ago. But he's talking about, he's got a $30 million minimum. I mean, we decided he has to have a $30 million, absolute minimum of $30 million, and a target minimum of $60
million. Yeah.
The average client over 20, the top 20% of the top 40 clients has over $2.4 billion.
Lord.
Right? And they're as messed up as any team I've seen.
Wow.
But he used to work for me. So he's a great guy. And, I helped him with the Jim Lehrer program, you know, changed his life with, playing to win. I mean, powerful engagement. So I took him down to see Jim Lehrer He went from blood work that was, the doctor said he wouldn't live to 55.
No to, kidding.
Yep. He said, well, I want to be there for my graduation, my daughter, my granddaughter. He says, well, you got to change everything because you're a mess.
What was he doing?
He was just fat and not working out and burning the candle at both ends. And he, you should have seen him. Today, I saw him. He's thin and in shape and working out every day and saw his daughter graduate and we'll see her get married. So, and he awesome. Said, this is the guy I want to tell you guys. This is the guy that saved my life. Pretty cool, huh?
That's awesome. God, what a great story.
Well, leadership gave me an opportunity to really make an impact on people's lives, not just collect a ransom on their production. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean that's what it's about,
right? You can really help people. So that's why it's always, you know, chapter three of every Supernova consulting that I do is about taking care of yourself, balance, ideal performance state, ideal recovery state. And I don't have enough time, but at least I plant the seed. And if they, but he's read all my books now. He's all in. You can imagine how intense. He's a West Point graduate. He's a pretty intense guy, but a good guy, really good guy.
Interesting.
That kind of blows my mind in terms of size. Yeah.
That blows my mind too.
It's still taking me a while to figure that out.
Wow. We got a guy here who is, he has very strong connections with incredibly wealthy group of potential clients, and he's opened a few accounts. You know, when he opens an account, it's usually north of $10 million, right? So he doesn't open anything small, and he doesn't have a lot of clients either. Doesn't have a huge number, but he's not that intense, right? So tends to give the business away, you know, that's what I've noticed.
Cheap. 25 basis points and stuff, you know, 50 basis points.
Yeah, if even that. I mean, I've seen him try to work for even lower, you know, amounts than that. And it really doesn't make any sense why do you do?
You know why?
I do know why, yeah.
Bad self-image or doesn't think he's creating any value.
That's exactly right. That's the part. I haven't focused on the bad self-image, but you hit the nail on the head probably. But he doesn't feel like he's creating any value. I'm like, well, what are you doing for them that they can't do somewhere else? You know, I mean, why are they doing business with you? And why does that not have any value? You know, we've talked about it, and he just keep bringing on these relationships and figure out how he can get paid to go below the thresholds and stuff, which just, I don't get it.
Will he get coached?
I can ask him. He buys franchises. You know, he's bought into several franchises like Mako. He's got that Take 5 oil change thing, and you know, part of that whole strategy is following their model. So, you know, as a franchisee, you do get coaching, you know. I mean, you have to, right? There's a model right that you're following. So he may be open to it. Might be able to. He's on a team now. And that team be the ones to – I'm watching these teams kind of struggle being a team, you know. So you're a team. I see that. But are you really a team? What are y'all doing that is a...
Right. Who's the director of planning? Who's the director of implementation, brand management, marketing, leadership? Nobody.
Yeah, they just have their little silo of...
Right. They're just, you know, four or five FAs bundled together to get bigger payout.
Correct. That's right.
And inherit the business. And so give them a pitch, and I'm happy to talk to them because, I mean... Look, if we could get him to 50 basis points or 60 basis points, the only way you're going to get him there is if he feels like he's got to get more confidence and he's got to get, believe that what he's delivering is superior to what they could get otherwise. So it's the financial planning and the 12-4-2 that makes you pissed off because you're putting in a lot of work. Therefore, you better get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you're not given anything, then you don't think you're worth it. So therefore you don't charge anything. I mean, when you sit there and you go, look, I'm spending time and effort with these people you know, I'm doing 1242. I'm doing financial planning. I care about their life. I think and anticipate for them so that they don't have to worry. I do all the worrying. That's worth 1%.
No doubt. Okay? Yeah, we did a pitch, Johnny and I did, to somebody last week. It's about $850,000, but it was exactly it. So we're trying to get his money from Fidelity to consolidate everything over here. Sort of the final pitch on that was, you know, who's going to have the relationship with your wife? You know, I know that sounds weird, but, you know, you're not getting any younger. And then happens if something happens to you, it's all going to be who can she sit across the table with and, hey, what do I do next?
Yeah, the insurance agent's going to put it all into a big life insurance policy.
Right, yeah. So anyway, we're supposed to hear back this week and see if we got it or not. So we'll knock on wood. That would be a good one for Johnny for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with those guys, but they don't have a line. You know, everything goes in an annuity or a life insurance policy. And that's not right for everybody, right?
No. Mm-mm. Right. Well, I feel like I just said, in spite of me, things are going pretty well. I keep feeling like I'm right on the verge of getting through something. You know, getting through, when I get through this, once I get my mom back up in this, once we get everybody out of the house what I'm struggling with the most right now is just trying to get over that.
It's
almost like a storm goes through, right? And then you're like, okay, I want
to. It's permanent white water from this point on, my friend.
Great. I knew I'd get the truth, right? So.
Yeah. When the one wave hits, you think it's calm? No. At this age, there's going to be another wave behind it and another wave behind that. So what you have to do is mentally get set to just live with permanent white water and just say, okay, while I'm here, I'm going to be completely focused on here. And when I'm there, I'm going to be completely focused there. I can't be there thinking about this, and I can't be here thinking about that. So I got to block it. Because they're old and things are going to happen and it's just going to be the next phone call.
Yeah. I have heard that that accelerates too. Like that this, like it starts happening, things start to happen much more quickly than.
Right. So if you just get your head set around it, then you'll do fine. It's kind of, you know, it's like practicing emergency procedures for an airplane. When it happens, you're ready and you just deal with it. And, you know, you're not emotional and you deal with it. Because you need to be the one that's calm and cool and collected under crisis. And because what happens is your brain shuts down when there's too much stress. You've seen it. You've probably felt it. We just couldn't, you didn't think right. You know, you're just like, what the hell? It sounds weird. I'm taking an antibiotic and I wondered why it wasn't working and wasn't working and wasn't working. Finally worked. And I looked at it today and I said, I'm supposed to be taking two pills a day. I took one.
Oh, geez.
I've never done that. That's because I was sick. And I didn't take the time to really think and read it. And your brain doesn't work the same way when you're sick or when you're stressed. It's just, you can't expect it to. So you got to know that when you're under stress, you got to have some loved one check on you. Make sure I'm doing this right, because that's your dad right now. He's not going to do anything. None of his thoughts are going to be rational for a while. And so you guys are going to get together and say, this is not negotiable. We're going to therapy. See this thing that happened with your fingers where you can't write? That's because you didn't go to therapy. We're going to therapy. somebody's got to be in command. And when somebody's sick, they're not in command. When they're coming out of anesthesia, they're in trouble. Their brain doesn't, it's like a brain that's been gassed, especially for older people. It takes them weeks.
So we have a hard time dealing with my father, that he doesn't listen to anybody. You know? And he almost becomes like the little kid who sits down, you know, like with his, and crosses his arms like this kind of thing, like just done. You can't tell me anything. And, you know, and we do have a hard time. I've noticed, and my sister and I talk about this a lot, you know, and my brother, but my sister and I, cause she's the one that's there the most. It's that, see my mother doing it, and we all seem to do it in one way or the other. Is, and now my sister does it. She approaches him directly, but she's very antagonistic when she does it. You know, she becomes like, you just don't want to respond to her because of the way she talks to.
She gets mad at him because she's frustrated and scared. Now he's scared and frustrated too. So now you put the two together and it just doesn't work. Watch the way the nurses do things and how they get people to do things. They're very, very good at it. They're trained to do it.
Look on YouTube and see if I can find any nurses.
Yeah, you'll find lots difficult of nurses. I'm not sure they're going to find them for that, though.
At least I tried.
Right. Dear, I'm trying. I'm just trying to find something to help Dad. What? That looks like porn to me.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, we need some strategies, though. We need some strategies. So my strategy was, if they're going to be so daggum belligerent, we need to all leave. We need to leave them alone for a couple of weeks and let's see how they do. You know, let dishes pile up, let them understand that, you know, toilets aren't going to clean themselves and, you know, dishes aren't just going to get put away. Meals aren't just going to magically appear on the table. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. I'll watch my dad come in there and he'll set a plate down. Here it is. Set it down.
Oh, yeah.
And it magically gets cleaned.
Right.
You know, it's amazing how that works.
Sister does it.
Yeah. The bathrooms are always clean. Well, yeah, anyway.
All right. I got to call it for, so I got to run. But
yes, sir. No. Good.
So think about your team that's dysfunctional and what would it be like if they were functional? And what would your guy be like if he charged 75 basis points instead of 25, we could double his business and probably double the team's business. So we
would make a huge difference.
We'd be doing good work for everybody and they would be happy and not tell you, why didn't you do this earlier? That's what my brother said. Why didn't you do this earlier? Why didn't you tell me to do this earlier? I said, I've been telling you this since you were 14. Okay. He's never listened to anything. But.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Glad you're feeling better. I'm glad you're on the mend.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay
it's
that
just,
way.
It's just my little gift that sits out there behind my head all the time, you know, that makes me a little less adventurous. But still, try and be me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. See ya.
Okay.
Bye.
See you later. Thank you, Rob.
Bye. Thanks.